James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is his co-host, CPS Mike. How are you doing today, sir?
Wonderful. Yourself, Mr. Couch Potato?
I am doing a lot better than your poor kitty cat's doing.
Yes. So this morning, I had to take Bjorn, the kitty cat, to the vet. He got an upper respiratory infection that only went to his eyes. And he got,
Wait a minute, he had an upper respiratory infection in his eye?
Yes. Instead of, like, coughing and sneezing, he just had, like, bad eye stuff. And then I was super freaking out while I was there, because they said, oh, they put a stain in his eyes, and Bjorn's freaking out, and he's not happy about it.
So Bjorn's kind of skittish, isn't he?
Yeah, so they can look at his eye, and they're like, oh, there's a, what did she say? An ulcer. And I'm like, an eye ulcer? That sounds terrible! No wonder his eyes are goopy. He's got an eye ulcer.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, maybe their side. But they're like, oh, it'll heal up, though. It's part of, like, the upper respiratory infection. And I was like, oh. And I was like, oh, is he going to lose his eyes? What's going on? They're like, oh, it's pretty standard. Pretty run-of-the-mill. Cats get this all the time. Okay. So they checked it for ear mites. And they said he may or may not have ear mites. But they gave me ear mite drops. And they gave me eye drops. And they gave me an antibiotic. And I was thinking, should I skip the antibiotic? Because I'm pretty anti-antibiotic. And I was like, well, if it was my health, I would skip the antibiotics.
But it's
my cat, so
it's
I'm
your little gentleman's health.
Right, so I'll be giving him the antibiotics so his eyes clear up, the eye drops and whatnot, and
you're gonna have a hell of a time getting all that stuff in him, you know that, right?
He fought them like the devil.
But you're his daddy.
Yeah, I've cleaned his eyes out before I took him there, like the day before, and he wasn't happy about it, but he didn't hiss and like that deep cat meow. You know, if I get a chance, I'm gonna slice you to shreds. Yeah, but he's and they gave him a cone. He's not happy about that.
Oh, they put him in the cone. He looks like a speaker.
Put him in the cone.
That is awesome.
As soon as I let him out of the carrier when we got home, he immediately tried to like hook it on stuff and back out of it and pry it off.
Of course he was. And I'm like, it's his head's in a fucking cone.
Yeah, eventually he just kind of curled up on my lap and said, forget it, I have a cone, whatever.
His cone sucks, Dad.
Yep, yep. You have any news this week?
Actually, I do, and so do you, my friend.
I have a bunch more news, yes. It's going to be a long intro segment.
Well, as our listeners may know, our very own Survival Punk James has been, you know, he's special guest starred on other people's podcasts and stuff. He's been interviewed before. Oh. Pork Therapy, the Survival Podcast, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Well, I never have. Until this week. It's not happened yet, but it happens in a couple of days. I'm going to be on the Prepper Recon Podcast. For those of you who heard our interview with Mark Goodwin, host of the Prepper Recon Podcast and author of several Prepper books.
It came out today for us and then sometime in the past for you guys.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to be on an upcoming podcast sometime in September. We're doing, I don't want to give everything away, but it is going to be a 9/11 special that he's doing, something to that effect, which is why I'm going to be on there. Our listeners by now know that they know my beliefs on 9/11, and now his listeners will know my beliefs
right.
on 9/11.
And me and Mike are planning on doing a 9/11 extravaganza episode, probably only for the supporters of the Survival Punk Army.
Right, though.
This be in the
might,
back end.
This might actually be our first episode of our exclusive podcast called that I've been calling Ranting so far.
Ranting. It's definitely we're gonna pick topics like 9/11. And we're going to dig in a lot deeper on
that.
This episode could be 2 to 3 hours long.
Right, it's going to be
we may lose our sanity.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, on this show, on our exclusive content, we're probably going to be discussing nothing but hot button issues.
Yeah.
And that's only for members of the Survival Punk Army.
Right.
And you know where to go to join up for that. We'll be telling you a little bit more about that later in the show. I almost skipped the rest of our stuff
Banter,
here.
Yeah.
Now, what just happened?
I got emails.
Oh, okay. Thank God. I thought your computer was telling us to go up ourselves.
Nope. Not
all
today.
Right. But you, once again, at CrossFit, have now gotten yourself injured again. And why don't you tell our folks what you did to yourself? And how you did it.
So we did this, part of the workout of the day, the WOD today, was toes to bars.
toes so
you,
to bars.
You jump up on a bar, like you're gonna do a chin up or a pull up or something, right?
Right.
And instead, you bring your feet to touch the bar. Your toes touch the bar in between your hands.
You're folding yourself in half upside down while dangling.
Yes. Yes.
Jesus Christ, why would you do that?
I'm excited that I can do them, because when I started, I could not do them.
I could do it if, you know, like four other guys were helping me.
Yes, yes. To hold your hands up there, support your weight, and then pick your feet up to touch your hands.
Yeah, I need a guy for each hand, and then two guys to lift my fat ass up to fold me in half.
Yeah.
Of course, then again, I'm not even sure you get the full fold. I do got quite a gut in the front there that's going to be blocking my legs.
Right. So, the one of the day was an 800-meter run. Uh-huh. And then you did one toes to bar and
what does WOD mean?
Workout of the day.
Workout of the day of the day?
Workout of the day.
You said the WOD of the day.
The WOD of the day.
That's the workout of the day of the day.
Whatever. So when you got back in for your 800 meter run, you did one toes to bar and then you did one, push press. Uh-huh. I used the 95 pound barbell.
Push press sounds like something you'd use to get the wrinkles out of your suit.
You have the barbell across your shoulders, and then you do a slight dip of your knees, and then thrust the bar overhead. That's one. And you know when you come back down. And then you did that, and then you did two toes to bars, two presses. Three toes to bar, three presses, until you get to 10 of each.
And at that point, did your sanity come back and you realize where the hell you are and run like your ass is on fire toward the door?
I was on the ground panting.
Of course you were.
After the 10, yeah.
Hell, I'm damn near on the ground panting after listening to that.
My hands started to rip on about the four toes to bars.
Yes, you heard him right. His hands started to rip.
Yes, I developed calluses, and then the calluses started to rip open. No blood, so it's not that bad.
All of this in the while doing the workout develops big blisters that then rip open.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're awesome. I had to rip off a little skin during the WOD, throw it on the ground. It's fun. I finished.
This is how the zombie apocalypse is going to start. You know that, right? People just ripping off their fucking skin and throwing it on the ground.
You know what?
Some dude's going to come up and eat it.
I would love to be at the CrossFit gym when the zombie apocalypse starts out, because there's just some good people to be with. I think we could fend them off.
I wouldn't want to be too far into the workout.
When I'm like laying on the ground like, hold on, zombie! I need to catch my breath.
Maybe 5 minutes in when everybody's pumped and you still got all your energy.
Right.
That would be a good time.
After the warm-up, which is pretty brutal today too. And then I've got sort of big news.
Big news.
I mean, fun for me. Sort of payoff of my. I think I've talked in the past about, you know, since I started the website, I've made a lot of good friends.
Absolutely.
Well, tomorrow I get to meet one of these good internet friends.
Oh, really? Who you mean?
Mountain Evan Chang, the creator of the Primal Professional. He's going to come to Nashville, and we're going to go hang out a little bit, him and his wife and myself.
His first name's really Mountain?
It may be a fake name.
Mountain Evan Chang?
Mountain Evan Chang, yeah. So we're gonna go to the Parthenon. I'm trying to talk him into, because he's paleo too. Paleo or primal. And I'm really thinking, you know, because showing them downtown, his wife is ridiculously hooked on the show Nashville.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure she's going to want to see downtown Nashville.
You're trying to talk him into Radizio's, aren't you?
I am trying to talk him into Radizio Brazilian Steakhouse. Because it's fairly primal paleo acceptable and beyond ridiculously good.
And incidentally, for those of you out there who have seen our pictures, when he throws it up with the podcast, me sitting there with the flame shirt, and then him sitting there with that Cheshire Cat grin. We're actually in Radizio's when that picture was taken.
Yes.
That was on his birthday.
We actually need to take a new Survival Punk picture, a couple of, like, promo pictures. But yeah, I really like that picture. It's a good picture of us, you know, out, and it's both of us. So tomorrow, meet Mountain Evan Chang. He's going to show off his new...
His new what?
He developed a boot.
A primal professional boot.
The boot looks amazing. It looks so amazing.
Really? What's it look like? Like a boot?
Like a boot.
Like a boot.
You know, but it's flat. There's no big arch hill in it. You know, It looks sort of like classic traditional. Like, I kind of want to see if I could trade in the Primal Professional shoes that I have when I quit my job and get a pair of his boots.
Primal Professional boots.
Yeah, so they look like they'd be better in the rugged wilderness than they would be.
Well, something you can talk about at the Parthenon tomorrow.
Yep. So what do we got coming up today?
Well, coming up today on the show, we're going to be talking about how Congress is moving to end the raw milk prohibition. 5 steps most preppers tend to overlook. We're going to be talking about some survival movies, something we haven't talked about on the show in quite some time. Buck Hoodlum, gluten-free. It's a lifestyle, not just a product. And then we're going to have our Permaculture Minute, our wild edible of the month, as it turns out, seeing how we haven't done a lot of these recently. Yeah, we've been off doing interviews and stuff, but this is going to be a classic episode. We're going to be telling you why the Survival Punk Army wants you, and we're going to have a few words from some of our sponsors. But let's just jump right into it with the good folks over at JM Bullion.
Right, JM Bullion, the best place online to get the best pricing, free shipping on all your gold and silver needs.
Absolutely.
They have some great things. Actually, sometime after our last episode, I actually went to their website looking, and they do carry 1/10 ounces of silver. Basically.
How big is 1/10 of an ounce?
Basically, it's a dime.
Really?
Basically, it's a dime. The sizes and stuff aren't exactly alike, but it's about the same material as a dime.
Hmm.
You know, for vending machine reasons, you can't
mix. Exactly. They can't make something the exact same size as a dime.
They've got the Walking Liberty design on the 1/10 ounces.
Really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I just ordered some silver.
Plus, I imagine with that small of a quantity, it'd be a great way to start investing in it when you don't have a lot of money to throw around.
Well, you're going to have to invest at least $100 for them to ship to you.
Oh, son of a bitch.
So
But
it's free shipping, right. So, you know, I would say best, you know, sock away about $20 a week or so, and then, you know, at the end of the month or so, order $100 worth of silver.
Yeah.
So order it once a month, you know, and that's $20 a week really isn't that much. I'm really trying to get you into getting some silver.
Oh, the more I hear, the more I'm thinking about it. Seriously,
got your piggy bank, but I think that you should need to start getting some amount of silver in your portfolio.
I mean, and this is a good investment for anybody, especially the global economy right now. The dollar's about to be worthless. So while you might as well start trading in your Federal Reserve notes for actual money.
Right, and speaking of which, you've just started your silver collection right now.
Is this a silver dime?
That is a silver dime from the year 1964.
1964? Why have you been...
Cherish it. I get them from work. It's one of the ways that I get silver for...
How do you get silver from work?
The coin machines at work coins reject silver coins because they're not the current weight that silver...
Not the right
dimes are, right. So it spits them out, and then when they spit them out, I go up there and trade worthless new dimes for precious old dimes.
Which are, I'd imagine, worth a bit more.
It's like $3, somewhere.
Yeah, but still $3 for a 10-cent piece.
Right.
I mean, you can see on that there's no copper filler, like in...
Right, the weight's different.
It does feel lighter.
If you throw it down against a hard surface or you flick it with your fingernail right, it'll make a ring.
Really?
Instead of the thud sound that you get from...
I've got to find some place to put that.
Yeah.
All right, but...
So, yeah, there. Your silver collection is started.
It started. Yeah, that's seed money right there.
Yep.
And if you want to get your silver collection or your gold collection or your platinum collection started, go to survivalpunk.com. Go to the banner on the right-hand side. Find where it says JM Bullion. Click on there and start turning your cash into money.
Right.
All right. Now, here's something that I know is near and dear to your heart.
Exactly.
Our first news story of the day about... Congress moves to end raw milk prohibition. This way you don't have to buy it out of the back of people's cars anymore.
Right. I mean, not that I am a libertarian / anarchist, but when the government does do something I agree with, I'm not so thick-headed that I can't give props where props are needed.
And, exactly.
We'll just jump right into this. Buying and selling raw dairy products across state lines has been outlawed in the U.S. since the late 1980s, when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, those bastards, decided that Americans were no longer free to make their own food decisions without governmental approval. But this senseless and unconstitutional policy of prohibition could soon become history of a bipartisan effort to restore food freedom
reaches a breaking point in Congress.
The Interstate Milk Freedom Act of 2014, or H.R. 4307, would lift current FDA restrictions that prohibit all interstate food involving raw milk. Under the new legislation, farmers who produce raw milk and sell it to eager customers looking for a more nutritious alternative to commercial swill will no longer have to worry about being fined, for instance, or raided at gunpoint by government goons with control issues. According to the Campaign for Liberty, the bill, which is introduced by Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky, already has broad support on both sides of the aisle. At least 20 lawmakers, including both Republicans and Democrats, have signed on to the legislation which seeks to protect America's family-scale farmers and restore the freedom of food choice for all Americans.
The Milk Freedom Act of 2014 would provide relief to local farmers, small producers, and others who have been harassed, fined, and in some cases, even prosecuted for the crime of distributing unpasteurized milk, reads a press release recently issued by Representative Massey. This bill would prohibit the federal government from interfering with the interstate traffic of raw milk producers. The article goes on a little bit longer.
Now, for those of you out there that are not quite sure on the whole raw milk thing, basically it's milk that has not been pasteurized.
Right. It has not been heat treated to kill bacteria, which may or may not be present in the milk, but it definitely, the heat treatment does kill, a lot of the beneficial things in milk. The enzymes that allow you to digest milk when you are lactose intolerant, myself included, are killed in the heat treatment process.
Yeah, little known fact to a lot of Americans, lactose intolerance has basically been invented by the pasteurization process.
Yeah, I sort of as a testing ground, I tracked down and I got some raw milk here in the state of Tennessee, and because I believe that I should be able to do that.
Absolutely, it's your God-given right.
And I drank a glass of milk for the first time in 10 years or more.
Now, let me tell you something about this guy when he's normally eaten dairy or drank milk anywhere near me. I will no longer be anywhere near him. It causes basically what I like to call gas warfare.
Yeah. I'm lactose intolerant. It's not a pretty sight.
It's not a pretty scent either.
I had no ill effects drinking this glass of milk, and it even tasted good. So another of the reasons I don't drink milk, one, you know, I'm paleo, there's some bad things from it. I'm lactose intolerant. I don't like the taste of milk. It just sort of tastes like thick and rancid to me.
So raw milk, in your opinion, tastes better than the pasteurized counterpart?
Yeah, it tasted a lot better. It tasted crisp and clean.
Crisp and clean.
Refreshing. Not like, rancid's the only thing I can come up with when I think about regular store-bought milk. It's just rancid.
Rancid.
So, you know, good job to the federal government. Hopefully this goes through. And, we can, getting raw milk in the stores could start happening.
That would be awesome. I've never had raw milk myself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be something I'd like to try it. I really would.
I may have to pick up some more raw milk.
Well, if you do, bring some by, because yeah. I'd like to have a.
It was delicious.
Your swamp water
it does
there.
Not last nearly as long as like store bought milk.
Well, yeah, because they haven't added preservatives and
right.
things to it. Exactly.
I mean,
which is part of the problem.
Yeah. So if you don't use a lot of milk, I wouldn't suggest getting a large quantity. I got a half gallon. I'll probably get a quart. But it was good. Good in my coffee. So good. So rich and so. Good.
But yeah, that's all I use it for. Just
definitely have to try it. Definitely, definitely. Now, why did the FDA ban raw milk in the first dang place? What was their problem with it?
There's so much propaganda in it. Like, which a lot of the stuff happened, like, a long time ago. You know, like, 1920s, 1940s, when, like, you know, the FDA was new and the stuff was going on. There were some diseased cows that were producing nasty blue milk because they weren't being treated right, they weren't being fed right. We didn't have any of the regulations we had on like mm-hmm. Milking animals and stuff. So to combat the fact that these cows are being like pushed and producing disgusting milk, They started putting stuff in it, like chalk.
To turn it
white again.
Oh my god.
And,
Why stop there? Why don't they just bleach the shit?
They did some funky stuff to it, and the nasty cow milk killed a bunch of kids. And, you know, anytime kids are killed, that's a... You gotta take up in arms, and you gotta make laws and make stuff happen. So, yeah. I drink raw milk, and I'm not dead, so...
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like...
I mean, with anything, when you're making any product, including milk, I mean, you have to take on certain responsibilities. If it's coming out a weird color, frickin' don't sell that milk.
Yeah.
Take care of your cows, for God's sake.
Right.
And it's like a few bad apples spoil the bunch, you know, to go all, you know, classic crap on you. Good God.
Right.
All right, but Congress is actually doing this. They're moving to end it, and that's really a good step in the right direction.
Yes. What do we got next?
Next up is our next second news story of the evening, 5 Steps Most Preppers Overlook. Now, when prepping, it's actually, as the more I talk to people, it's pretty easy to overlook stuff that should be common sense.
Right. And this article comes from my friend Jeremy Knuff over at howtosurviveit.com. Let's just jump into his top 10 here. Number 1, eliminate debt. Debt makes you a slave and limits your options. So true. When you have to pay $1,000 each month to MasterCard, you can't afford to leave a job that's killing you. And since you're locked into a cycle of paying interest to live outside your means, you can't invest as much into your self-reliance and your retirement. I'm not recommending that you eliminate access to credit, but you should make it a goal to not carry any consumer debt except for a mortgage and possibly a car loan.
Yeah, that speaks to both of us. You recently paying off a car loan.
Right.
And me having paid off this house within the last couple of years. And paying off this house was keeping me in kind of a bad place for a while. I mean, I was at a job that was killing my soul.
Right.
I hated that job. I'm using the word hate here. I despise that place. I mean, I would rather have been paid to scrub out porta potties in Arizona in the middle of August than work for that damn job again.
Yeah, I know how you feel, and definitely not having a car payment or any debt.
You were so happy, dude, when you paid off your car.
Yes, yes.
Not as happy as I was when I paid off my house, but still.
Right.
All right, moving right along. Get healthy. Your health is always important, but it is even more critical during times of stress and physical challenges. Take the time for cardio, strength training, and stretching. Eat plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables while avoiding processed foods, tobacco, and excess alcohol. And get your stress under control using meditation and relaxation techniques. Better health will help you cope better during a crisis, but it will also help you to live longer, even if a major crisis never occurs. Yeah, a lot of that is, that's common sense stuff, like I was saying right from the beginning. Common sense stuff. You gotta be healthy.
Yes.
Like, anybody who's read the first, 299 Days book, the main character, Grant, based on Glenn Tate, is talking about how, yes, he was prepping stuff. That's great stuff for the podcast right there. But he was talking about, he was prepping his food in that storage unit.
Right.
But he was having to move all this stuff upstairs, and he realized he was getting winded and, I mean, pouring sweat and everything. He couldn't physically do it. That's when he realized you got to prep yourself. I mean, if you can't do that, you can't do much else.
Yeah.
You're going to be the first fat bastard out with a heart attack as soon as the crap hits the fan.
And you know what? I talk about fitness in every single episode, so I think my stance on getting fit and getting healthy are pretty clear.
Absolutely.
Next is develop independent revenue. When you're trapped working for someone else, you are subject to the whims of your supervisors, your industry, or the general economy. If you get fired from a job that provides all of your income, you're screwed. But if you run your own business, it's impossible to get fired. Plus, you can develop passive income so that you are paid by the value you provide and not just the hours that you work. An added benefit is the tax write-offs that corporations provide effectively increase your income without any added work.
Like Survival Punk.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yes. Run your own website business, your own podcast. That's passive. I mean, this is not strenuous labor that's taking time out of your day, but it is making you, it's putting a little green in the old piggy bank.
It is. I put a good amount of time into this podcast, mm-hmm. into the website too. I mean, writing articles, doing the social media, recording podcasts, editing podcasts, uploading the podcast. I'd say part-time job hours into this thing, at least.
And you know something? Nobody can fire you from this job.
Nobody can fire me.
No.
Well, I could fire me, but I love what I do, so I'm not going to.
Absolutely not. All right. Next, build a network. Even the most challenging disaster can be made tolerable when you have a group of like-minded people to share the burden. But you need to build this group before disaster strikes. I went through this myself when I became very ill for a few months. I was barely able to leave the couch, but needed to slaughter my livestock, which I could not have done by myself at the time. Fortunately, I was able to tap into my network, and together we knocked the task out quickly and efficiently. Think about some of the tasks that would be difficult or impossible to do alone, such as pulling overnight security, removing downed trees, or stopping a wildfire. Find people in your area, ideally neighbors, who share your mindset and complement the weaknesses in your skill set. Nobody is going to be good at everything.
Right.
No,
nobody can.
No, so you need specialists, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they're good at one thing, and they're most likely they're going to be better at that one thing than anybody else in your group. Build your group based on that. Everybody's got a job, but everybody can help when somebody falters.
Right. I mean, and another key aspect is, do you want to survive, a collapse, an apocalypse alone?
No.
Really? Who really wants to be the last man standing?
I mean, even, people were not designed to be alone. We are social creatures. We're descendant from social creatures. Creatures that live in groups. I mean, look at all the great apes. They live in groups.
Yeah.
And we are descendant from that. I mean, we evolved from that. We're social creatures. Personally, I think the way society is set up now, I mean, there's too many people living together.
Right.
But not everybody's going to be a good hermit. I mean, some people will. I mean, there's old mountain men who've been by themselves for the last 50 years, and they're doing fine. But trust me, that's got to get boring and very lonely. I mean, you got to have somebody to talk to, even if it's a volleyball.
Yeah, I mean, for health, the community aspect to health is very important. It definitely stays off depression and
mental.
I was talking earlier in an interview I did about how I really think community is sort of the center stone to health altogether. So, if you have a bad community, you're alone, you get depressed because you're alone, you're depressed, so you don't want to get off the couch.
Exactly, depression.
You're depressed, so you start eating buckets of ice cream and junk food.
There goes your morale.
There goes your morale, your health, you're getting fat. And then it's a cycle, so it gets worse and worse and worse, So, community. Build a network.
Next up is practice and training. I know a lot of people in the prepping community who have more gear and supplies than me. I do not know many who are more prepared, though. If there's anything the Marine Corps taught me, it's that you can never be too prepared. Definitely invest in the gear and supplies, but make sure to get off the couch and practice using them as often as possible. The time to learn how to start a fire is before you need to. I can assure you that reading about how to start a fire with a bow drill and actually doing it when you're cold and wet are two very different things. Take time to develop practical knowledge. I can tell you, reading about starting a fire with a bow drill and starting a fire with a bow drill under the best conditions is a pain in the ass.
I mean, yeah, look at one of the earliest episodes of Survivor Man. He spent 12 hours trying to start a fire.
Yes, yes. And if you think you're going to the woods and just pick up some stuff and start making a bow drill or a hand drill fire, your hands will get ripped up worse than mine.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's one thing. I mean, you think you can just go out there and get this piece of wood and get this piece of wood and get some cordage and whatever. And But you got to know what kind of woods are going to work best.
Exactly.
You got to know what kind of conditions. You got to know what kind of tinder is going to catch. You got to teach yourself this. And not just using a bow drill. You've got to teach yourself several different ways of starting fire, because guess what? The materials for a bow drill are not always going to exist.
Yeah.
They're not always going to be where you need them when you need them. So, I mean, yeah, learn this stuff while you don't have to know it. Like it just
exactly.
Said.
Exactly. So, good job, Jeremy. I really like this article. I didn't see any glaring grammatical errors like we see on some of the sites.
Oh my god! No, everything looked like it was spelled very correctly. So
good job.
Props for the grammar. Okay, now it's time for a word from our affiliate ad over at our affiliate Well Food Co.
Well Food Co. Yeah, Well Food Co. John Wellborn and his wife's company, Well Food Co. They do a lot of paleo foods. So the paleo MRE, they invented that. They have the keto variety for the people like me and Jimmy Moore that want to stay ketogenic. They've got a higher carb, sort of a post-workout paleo MRE with pineapple and coconut flakes that your wife thoroughly enjoyed when I let her sample it. Dehydrated organic pineapple. All of their ingredients are organic, which is, you see a slight price increase going to organic, but, you know, is your health worth it?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then, you know, if you want a cheat day, why sacrifice your health when you can have a healthy cheat day and try one of their paleo chocolate bars or, you know, cookies? Because their ingredients are, you know, gluten-free and organic and still tasty as hell.
Absolutely. So go to survivalpunk.com, find Well Food Co. Are they in the banner?
They do have a banner.
They do have a banner.
Yes.
Click there and, you know, start ordering.
Get some paleo MREs and get some carne bars and you will not regret it.
Started to switch back into my JM bullion spiel for a minute there.
Yeah.
Alrighty, now it's time to talk about something we have not talked about on this podcast in a month of Sundays. Survival movies.
Yes.
Movies set in a survival situation, a post-apocalyptic situation. We threw out a bunch of names of different movies, movies that we know, movies that one or both of us know, and we decided managed to pull out a top five here that we're going to be talking about. Now, these are in no particular order. These are just five movies that are set in a survival situation that we would like to express our feelings on, so to speak. So where would you like to start?
So as a brief intro, I really like post-apocalyptic fiction, and it's definitely one of the things that got me into survivalism.
Absolutely.
Zombie movies get you thinking, get you on that path, and it's an easy sort of way to get the non-prepper, non-survivalist onto the path.
Absolutely.
So let's just work our way down the list. I tried to spitball movies here that I know we've both seen. So most of the movies on the list we've either both seen or you're at least very familiar with.
I've seen two of these movies.
You've seen two, but you know.
Yeah, but I know about the other three.
Right. And the last one is one that we're going to have heated words on because we are very opposing thoughts on
this
movie. So first off, let's take it away with Zombieland.
Zombieland. This is one of my top two favorite zombie movies of all time. Well, top three now. Favorite zombie movies, period. Zombieland is set in post-apocalyptic. They don't really go into what caused it, other than the first time somebody took a bite out of an infected hamburger, which
it was mad cow disease.
Yeah, mad cow disease is what started
right.
it. Now, one of the things I love about this movie, society has fallen. There's so few humans left. They've cast off their names and they just go by where they're from. I mean, like the heroes of this movie are Little Rock and Wichita and Tallahassee and what's his name, Toledo.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So these are the heroes of our movie, so to speak. And trust me, they're no heroes by any stretch of the imagination. They're just trying to survive like anybody is.
Right. The movie is definitely a comedy, but it has some lessons to be had in it.
Absolutely. I mean, like Toledo, the main character, I mean, he has all these rules that he's had to make up for himself to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
Things that he's witnessed, things that he has himself experienced. Like, check the back seat, keep up your cardio, stay limber, things like that. I mean, it's all just common sense, good advice.
Right. And
definitely with the cardio, being on the run from the zombies, and then just the mindset of developing a set of rules to survive in. So when you're under stressful times, having a set of rules that you can rely on really takes a lot of stress off, because your mind's going to want to freak out and reel away from the horror of stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, zombies are taking it to a far, you know, into the collapse scenario. But, you know, under stressful times, you're going to want something your mind can fall back on. You can mechanically go about, check the back seat, keep up the cardio. You know, you can keep these rules, and it'll kind of help preserve your sanity, and it could keep you alive.
Plus, there's something that the other three characters had that I also recommend in this survival situation. They had goals set. Something to occupy their mind to keep them from just basically going mad. Tallahassee, for example, was obsessed with finding what he considered to be the world's last Twinkie.
Right.
While the other, while Little Rock in Wichita, they wanted to get to Pacific Playland. It was a happy place from their childhood, and it was their goal. They all right. had these goals that they were determined to get, and it kept them focused. A focused person can accomplish a lot more than right. somebody who's lackadaisical about the entire situation.
Yes, definitely have goals and meet those goals. Although I don't think during a collapse you should try to make it to an abandoned theme park, nor go on a hunt for Twinkies, but make goals and achieve those goals.
I would be going on a hunt for Twinkies. I'm just saying, I'm throwing that out there right now. I would so be Woody Harrelson in that movie.
No, you wouldn't. You'd make a beeline for my homestead.
What, your homestead?
Yes. Along with all of my exes, I'm sure they'd show up. Hey, we're here to see you.
Hey, look at it this way. Society will have fallen. It's martial law. There's not even martial law. There's no law.
Yes.
And I can kill all your exes at that point.
I was more thinking I would have a harem.
A harem?
Yes, Sultan James. Doesn't have a good Sultan James?
Oh, my God. I would love to... Actually, you Sheik know what? James? I would love to... Yeah, you're right. You can have your harem. I'll kill my exes.
There you go.
All right, that's a good compromise.
Yes. Yeah,
so I don't think any of them are going to see, most of them, they'll be like the first ones gone. That whole cardio thing is kind of...
Yeah. So a couple lessons from Zombieland. Mostly it's interesting, does make you think a little bit, but it's just a fun movie.
It really is.
I would say there's some over-the-top things and some non-accurate things, so it's not exactly the best movie for survivalism. There is a scene where Woody Harrelson's character is teaching the young girl in the movie how to shoot a rifle. It was either a BB gun or a .22 rifle, one of the two. But the tips he gave her were actual tips on how to shoot a rifle.
One of them,
breath, the finger pulling.
Yeah, the breath.
I know in a lot of the movies, they'll give out the tip, you know, just to squeeze the trigger, which is bullshit. Do not squeeze the trigger.
They even said that in Punisher Warzone. They had Frank Castle say it. Squeeze, don't pull.
Right. Which is wrong. You never want to squeeze the trigger. You want to press the trigger. Kind of like you're operating, you know, a cell phone button or something. So instead of squeezing it, which is retarded, because you're going to... The squeezing motion is going to cause you to shoot wrong. It'll
cause you to move the gun.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to have it come straight back, and obviously everyone listening knows this. You want to come straight back and try to touch with like the middle pad of your fingertip straight back.
I wish everybody press could straight see back right now.
What?
People need to see you because you've just been sitting here doing the finger thing for like the last couple of minutes. Yeah. You remind me of the little boy off The Shining.
Oh. Red rum. Yes. I could use my new axe to break down your door if you want.
Now, that's a
Here's Johnny.
Would you consider that a survival movie?
People did survive, but crazy ghosts and stuff, not so much so.
Anyway.
What do we got next for movies?
Mad Max is next on the list, also set in a post-apocalyptic world. No zombies, though.
Yes. So, Mad Max, and they're making a new Mad Max, and I'm going to have to see it.
Yeah, I've seen a trailer for it, but we're talking about the original movie that put Mel Gibson on the map.
Right. I mean, there were, So, I liked all of the old Mad Max movies. They were good. The first one, when there was some sort of significance of there being a society left. I didn't care for that one as much as the next two, which were, you know, complete collapse down, no society, you know.
I just always thought it was people cruising around the desert in wicked-looking vehicles.
Yeah, so the first one, you know, they were still in a city, and there was, like, wild biker gangs, and, you know, society was on the downfall. And then somewhere the premise was after that one, we just nuked ourselves to death. And what I found to be kind of weird, maybe it's just an Australian thing, because the movie was set in Australia, that in the future, after the apocalypse came, everyone was struggling to find gas, petrol, which was still running and active, you know, 10 years after a collapse.
Oh.
But bullets and ammunition was scarce and hard to find and, you know, impossible. When, you know, bullets, ammunition doesn't really have an expiration date, you know, especially if kept dry. In the desert of Australia, I don't really see that being an issue.
Yeah, well, it is if, you know, you've shot them all.
I don't think that was the problem.
Well, I mean, in the first 10 years after a collapse, there'd be a lot of shootings.
Right. I mean, the gasoline would become unstable and probably not work after the 10-year time period. I mean, especially all that gasoline unstabilized, I'm sure at the 10-year mark would be stretching its, you know, viability of usefulness. As far as the ammunition goes, maybe that's just an Australian thing because it's harder to get ammunition. The gun laws are stricter.
It's an island continent.
Here in the U.S., though, I think there'll be bullets around for a long, long time.
In your estimation, how many rounds of ammunition do you think exist? I mean, it's got to be like...
trillions.
Yeah, at least. I mean...
trillions and trillions.
I mean, and in the prepper community, that's almost as good as money.
I just counted up the number of rounds I have for my .22 long rifle the other day, because it's still in a bad storage. You never find .22. I happened to get my hands on a 225-round box of ammo the other day. Went home, added it to my other, and decided to count up and see how much I had, and it was 2,325 rounds.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's .22, though. Most of them come in 500-round boxes for, $20 or whatever. So, I'm pretty secure now that I can, you know, start shooting the .22 again a little bit.
I mean, that's why they recommend the .22. I mean, it's cheap ammunition, and it's great for target practice. I mean.
Right. It's just been completely unavailable for, like, the past year and a half or so.
Really?
That's the number one thing. No one can find it. Everything else come back in after the great ammo scare, but .22's still kind of hard to find.
Huh. That's because everybody stocked up on it.
Yeah, so Mad Max is a big pick. I like it. It's sort of shows, you know, everyone's like, there's always talk of like the great biker gangs and the hordes, you know, that are going to be roaming after the apocalypse and killing and murdering people. And this sort of tends to show that there's, you know, these big groups of people that just want to, like, you know, like, Genghis Khan, you know, go around and rape and destroy.
Yeah, with no laws in a post-apocalyptic world, what's to stop people from doing literally whatever they want?
Yes.
If they see something, they take it. If they see someone, they take them.
Which, you know, throughout history, we've had brief periods of times where groups will gain power like that. And we'll go around, you know, rape, pillage, plunder, and murder.
And it's happened in every war that's ever happened.
So a quick little side story here, talking of raping, pillaging, plundering. After just listening to a multi-part podcast on the Mongolian Empire and Genghis Khan, so when the Persians sent emissaries up through China to, like, you know, sort of scout out and spy on the Chinese, they come across the greatest city in China. And they're miles and miles down the road, and they're coming up on it, and they see what they think are snow-capped mountains in the distance. And they get closer, you know, and they're walking down the road, they get closer and closer, and the road becomes oily and slick, and a stench comes upon them. And it gets so bad, they eventually have to get off the road. Well, it turns out that what they thought was snow-capped mountains was every single inhabitant of the city murdered and stacked one upon each other. And a city of over 1 million people.
Oh my god, that's what the snow caps were?
And then the bodies compressing each other from being stacked upon of each other squeeze the oil from the body and then flooded down the road to where they had to get off the road. So imagine this. You know, the Persians, their first time seeing the Chinese when they're trying to go out on a scouting mission, you know, thinking they may want to come in here and try to conquer them. They see a city that's many times larger than anything they have in Persia.
And it's
been destroyed completely by somebody else.
Yeah, I'd turn back.
They turn back afraid for their lives.
Well, yeah, you can't really blame them, can you?
Yes. So yeah. Side story, that those are sort of brief, few and far in between throughout history. Normally, we have fairly extended periods of, you know, peace before one of these groups gained the power. So I think in a collapse, we would have some gangs, but I don't think it would last that long. Society wants to return to sort of a homeostasis.
Most of society.
Most of society, and then there's...
But you'll see pillaging, raping, and plundering in every single war out there.
Right, and I think the good part of society will band together to eliminate that threat. I mean, it'll take force, but I don't think that, you know, if we have a collapse, that's it, we're done. 1,000 years of darkness. What do we got next?
Alright, next is the Dawn of the Dead.
So, we're going to say, I'm speaking about the original Dawn of the Dead, directed by the famous director Romero.
Romero.
Yes. The Zombie King. Not the remake that was a terrible piece of crap.
Oh, they remade it?
They remade every movie he's ever made.
Oh, for the love of God.
Yeah, they've destroyed George Romero's legacy.
Yeah, Hollywood's run out of frickin' ideas.
They have. So, the premise there was, you know, part of the zombie apocalypse that he did, Dawn of the Dead. It follows a band of survivors that take refuge in a shopping center, a mall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they sort of block off the entrances, you know, get the zombies out, and then they've got access to everything in that mall, which is sort of a bad idea, but...
Malls have a lot of doors.
The malls do have a lot of doors. There's some other issues that they come across, but on the good side, they have... You know, this is back in the 70s and 80s. There was a sporting goods store in there with, like, you know, some guns.
Right.
Ammunition. Food. There was... Basically, all their needs were met inside there, at least short term.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see there'd be food enough to last for a very long time, especially if you got a lot of people.
Well, think of... I mean, you know, a survivor group of, you know, 10 people or less, the canned goods stockpile, everything in the entire food court that would last a long time... Would last a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even with just-in-time delivery systems that, you know, most places use now, I would still think you could get by maybe several months to a year. With the combined food, the food stores, and then, you know, the outlining places that have, you know, snack shops and whatnot.
Right.
So, not a bad concept. And what I really liked about the original Dawn of the Dead, unlike the remake, Romero had a real flair for embedding social commentary in his movies. So yeah, they're zombie horror movies, but he makes a lot of, you know, comments reflecting society at the time and stuff. So,
such as?
Racism, sexism. You know, he sort of brings up these topics, you know, throughout the movies, and especially in survivor groups, you need to sort of consider these things. Do I really want someone in my group that's going to be a racist or a bigot, that's going to be narrow-minded, make poor choices?
Someone like Merle from The Walking Dead.
Yes. Yes. Yes, they may have skill, but poor decisions could be your downfall.
Right, you could have the most skilled guy in the world with a gun, but if he's a frickin' hothead, they're just gonna go rushing in.
It doesn't really help you any.
No.
And, you know, that's really not the sort of society that I'd want to rebuild. You know, I want good people. Because they're just one step from being a Mongolian at that point.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to be going into a city and murdering a million people. I want I want good people.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was, the movie really made you think about that. The zombies were almost a backdrop to, you know, pointing out some of the evils of mankind. And I don't want to go down hippie lane here, but it made you think on multiple levels. What would you do in a collapse? You know, how'd group dynamics work? Getting along with people. And then just yourself, you know, working on your thinking. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a multifaceted movie, and I really enjoyed it.
Now, if you really think about it, zombie flicks like that, I mean, they're not that much different from, like, a Mad Max type scenario. I mean, you're just interchanging, like, roving gangs of, like, pillagers and plunderers and rapists with zombies.
Right.
I mean, either way, they're going to kill you just once it's going to eat you. You know, they're probably going to have sex with you.
I didn't realize we were gabbing so long on this.
All right, next is a movie I have not seen, but I know the premise of it. It's called Soylent Green.
Right, so we're just going to run through this. I mean, I don't know necessarily you will learn something from all of these movies. They all have certain little things in them, but I think they're entertaining. And if you're in the survival preparedness community, if you're interested in those things, then you'll probably find these movies interesting if you haven't seen any.
Yeah, no, what's the basic premise behind Soylent Green for those out there that don't know?
Sort of a dystopian future. The government has become really totalitarian. I'm really struggling with that word.
Totalitarian?
Totalitarian, yes. Anyway, they've become really authoritative and, Excuse you. And there's like food crises going on. They're having energy crises. There's a lot of problems going on. Poverty. On massive scales, people are dying. And to sort of solve some of these problems, the government has an Uber version of food stamps. They dispense food to you, and it's called Soylent. So it meets all your nutritional needs. It keeps you healthy. And
Now, what part does, what's his name, though?
Charlton Heston.
What part does he play in this movie?
He plays a police officer that's investigating some sort of case. And through the investigation of this case, he ends up finding out that Soylent is people!
Soylent Green is people! It's people!
Yes, they have a euthanasia program where, like, when you reach a certain age, they take you to be, like, enlightened and whatnot. And what that really is they're just turning you into food. They're recycling you, which...
They liquefy the dead to feed intravenously to the living Leo.
It's scary.
Basically turning the survivors into cannibals unwittingly.
So they don't know they're eating people. Some of the population of our world is so stupid. I kind of wonder if we said you're eating people now, if they'd be like, that's pretty tasty. Best people burger I've ever eaten. Nom.
You're picturing Sylvester Stallone when you said that.
Yes.
You had a Demolition Man moment.
Yes. I think we should go to the pet store and get rats to make rat burgers so we can eat rat burgers.
You know what? I'll let you do that. Just don't tell me about it.
Like, this is the tastiest burger I've ever eaten. It's the best rat burger you've ever eaten. Yeah. So
and now the last movie on our list. This one's the polarizing one. I've been waiting to get to this one. The movie, the Brad Pitt super movie, World War Z. And if you haven't noticed, 4 out of 5 movies involve people eating people on this list.
Yes. Right,
it happens.
You loved this movie.
Yeah, I really, really did. Me and our producer, we both really liked the movie World War Z. You, on the other hand, did not for some reason.
I hated it.
Oh, why did you hate it?
I am a huge fan of the book. The book was amazing. It was super well written. Probably the best zombie fiction book I've ever read. It followed a nameless narrator working for the army that was going around as a journalist interviewing survivors of the Great Zombie War about how their harrowing stories of survival and what they did.
Mm-hmm.
All these people all across the world, all these different stories, amazing stories of survival.
So what you're saying is the book is basically a collection of interviews.
The book is a collection of interviews, yeah.
See, that has nothing to do with the movie. We've never read the book. So.
Right, the book has nothing to do with it.
I did not even know there was a book until you said there was.
Yes.
Because
I'm
American,
the movie has nothing to do with that. The whole zombie camouflage thing they developed in it was not there. There were some great war stories about, you know, like the first time that, you know, the zombie hordes are really rising and the United States government decided to have a standoff in New York.
Against the zombie hordes.
At the, there was a bridge, the Yonkers Bridge, maybe? There was a big bridge in New York, and they're going to have a standoff there, and they were, like, firebombing the zombies, and you know, they're using modern shock and awe techniques against zombies. You can't shock and awe a zombie.
No,
they
you
have
can't.
No emotion. So, you know, they had all their modern technology there, you know, and they were there, and they decided to do a firebomb thing, and they dropped bombs on the zombies that were coming towards the soldiers on the bridge, and, you know, they're clapping, yeah, we got those motherfuckers. And they just kept walking on fire. And if the bombs hit them and took their limbs off, they just drugged themselves. They kept going. They kept going.
Zombies don't have a survival instinct.
Right. I mean, the people were freaking out, and they got overrun and massacred.
Oh, the people did?
The people got completely massacred at this Battle of Yonkers.
Well, against an enemy that doesn't feel pain? Durr.
Right. I mean, their weapon systems, which were like semi or full automatic, they're shooting wildly. They're being trained their whole lives to shoot center of mass. That doesn't do anything on a zombie.
No, no, it doesn't.
You gotta take controlled shots, destroying the brain.
Yeah, you gotta cap the dome.
They weren't hitting nothing. They're freaking out. They're blowing limbs off. They can't stop them. They're coming on limbless. Their minds are reeling away from this. They're like, how do you fight an enemy like this? They're coming at you on fire with no lower torso, and you can't shoot them and kill them. The men are freaking out. They're committing suicide on the spot. Mm-hmm. And there's so many stories like that. Mm-hmm. It's so full of stories.
But we're not talking about the book. You're talking about the book.
I'm talking about the book because the book was amazing. And the movie
was book
rubbish.
The book aside, just pretend like the movie is just its own separate entity, just happens to share the same name. You know, kind of like the show The Lost and the movie The Lost that never got made.
I tried, because I heard that. I heard people say, if you ignore the book, the movie's good.
The movie was good.
I think they're wrong. I think even on a pure stance of, like, a zombie movie, I did not enjoy it.
Oh, I did. I mean, that movie had a great amount of terror. I mean, that had some of the most terrifying freaking zombies I've ever seen in it. Running, leaping, frickin' fast zombies scare the ever-loving shit out of me, and we made the mistake of watching this movie in the evening time.
I didn't feel that the human element was there on par with the book, and I can't separate the two.
I think the jinx element was there. Brad Pitt was a total jinx for everybody he was around in that movie. If you think about it, people were getting along just fine until Brad shows up, and then all of a sudden they start dropping like flies. The entire state of Israel had walled off, and they were fine. Then he gets there, and guess what? The zombies figure out how to build a zombie ladder.
Yeah, I just...
I mean, I'm not saying
the resources of getting this guy around
is a silly bitch singing on the microphone's fault, but still...
I thought it was a little stupid to be spending all these massive resources to fly this guy around because for some reason they thought he would find a cure, which he did,
Well, he didn't actually find a cure, he found camouflage.
He found camouflage, yeah.
Well, no, because they wanted the other guy to find the cure, you know, the guy that accidentally tripped and shot himself in the head.
Right.
Like, he never made it off the plane. I thought that was just a brilliant touch. I'm like, this is our Obi-Wan Kenobi. He is our last... Oh, shit, he tripped and now he's dead.
Yeah, I just...
I loved that.
I just thought the movie's terrible.
Plus, I mean, and when they're leaving, they've refueled and everything, and they're on their way out. Once again, Brad Pitt being a jinx, his phone goes off and alerts all the zombies that they're, you know, around, because his wife just won't stop frickin' calling him, which would be my first rule. I'm like, I'll call you. You don't call me. You are on an aircraft carrier. I'm in hell. Yeah, that would be my first rule. Yeah. But anyway, no, the leader of these guys gets killed. I mean, well, doesn't get killed, he gets bitten, and he knows that's it for him, and so he caps himself.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a beautiful sacrifice just to get, I mean, to get them out because they believe, they have hope that this guy will bring about the end of all this hell. I mean, and it's worth it to them.
See, and I didn't like that. I didn't like that this one man found a cure for all this. Like, I just didn't... The story I didn't feel was great enough. I didn't... What turned around the war in the book series was a lot. It was not an easy thing. Oh, you got to infect yourself with these bad diseases, and the zombies will just ignore you, and then you can take pot shots.
Well, they didn't end the war.
It was a brutal, gruesome war.
It was a brutal, gruesome war.
Not like this.
Well, you know, the movie didn't cover a lot of the war. It covered him trying to find the cure. I mean, it covered some of the war at the end, but they didn't end the war. Yeah. No, it just showed them that they now have an advantage.
Let me explain it to you this way.
Oh, God.
This, to me, is equally, if not even more insulting than Ron Howard's Da Vinci Code. It was literally, if you took source material that was that great, that well written, and then pooped out this product.
I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you on this. You see, because the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, those movies, even if to somebody who had not read the book, those were still garbage. World War Z, the movie, book aside, was a good movie. I mean, it kept you in suspense. It made you cry. Hell, there was moments it made you laugh. It was great all around.
See, and even look, trying to put it aside, I wasn't entertained by the movie. I was like, I don't care. I just don't care.
You just don't like Brad Pitt. That's your problem.
I would have liked a lot of things different, but I thought his character needed to not be important, and it needed to be the stories of the I don't understand why this movie is World War Z and not
just another random zombie movie?
Yes, exactly.
So you're saying that you wouldn't have had a problem with it if it had just been some other zombie movie?
I would not have had as much of a problem. I did not enjoy the movie. I found myself bored playing on my phone through most of it.
I'm probably going to get lynched for this. I didn't enjoy Shaun of the Dead, so I was looking for more of a comedy, and they had a little too...
I was pleasantly surprised by how non-comedy that movie was, because I expected a comedy, and you're more of a comedy aficionado than I am. So
well, you know, I mean, it's kind of silly because, like, right at the beginning of Shaun of the Dead, his buddy pretty much gives away the whole plot of the movie while they're sitting there drinking.
Yeah,
he gives away. I mean, he drops. He's like, "In the morning we'll have a Bloody Mary," and then they get attacked by a zombie named Mary.
Yeah. So that wraps it up for the apocalyptic fiction pick of the week.
Absolutely. All right, now it is time for Gadget Punk. This week we're going to be talking about Buck Hoodlum, which to me sounds like somebody that would mug you in the woods.
And I thought about doing an episode of Survival Punk all on the big survival knife philosophy. There's sort of two branches of survival. There's a billion branches, but two of the main branches are either you're a big survival knife guy, or you're a small camping axe, small or big hatchet guy.
You're a hatchet guy.
I'm a big survival knife guy.
You're a hatchet dude.
I don't own a hatchet.
Whatever, you have like two, you just showed me one out in the driveway.
I just bought an axe, but I haven't used it yet.
Hatchet, hacks, whatever.
So yeah, for wood processing, I've always preferred to get a big knife. The Buck Hoodlum, oh my god, is a blade length of 10 inches. If you count the handle, it's 15 and a half inches. A 15 and a half inch long knife. You've seen this thing out here before.
I have.
It's that one. It's the one I carry. It's in my car right now.
Oh yeah, I guess I have.
That's your yard. Remember that? Slicing the steak and eating with it?
Oh yeah, you were cutting a tomato there.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that.
So yeah, it's... I tried that too, yeah. I like the Buck Hoodlum a lot. It has a notch on the back that they say is used for scoring and breaking open bone marrow, or you could use it to possibly cut barbed wire and get through that. I've seen some reviews and some talk on YouTube and whatnot that notch on the back can hinder structural integrity and it while batoning. So you use your blade and you try to baton through a long piece of wood that can snap the tip off. Usually in extremely cold environments, up in Maine or Michigan, you know, during the middle of winter trying to baton through wood. We don't have extreme cold weather here. I've batoned through some pretty thick, very hard wood. Never had an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you're looking for a big survival knife, the one that I use all the time and have used for a couple years now is the Buck Hoodlum knife. In support of Ron Hoodlum. Ron Hood, who's Ron Hood's hoodlums, yeah.
Ron Hoodlum.
So yeah, and I've reviewed this back in April 9th of 2012.
April 9th of 2012, and for those listeners out there, you can find that article about the Buck Hoodlum on survivalpunk.com. I just dig into the archives.
Right, so good, yeah, definitely look into it. I like to
search window where you can find your stuff.
Yeah.
You do?
Right there.
Why is it buried all the way down there?
That's where I want it.
You don't want it up at the top?
Nope, I want my sponsors at the top.
I know, but everybody expects the search thing to be up at the top.
It's right there.
They did. I did.
Anyway, so the Buck Hoodlum knife. Highly recommended.
Alrighty, and that'll conclude Gadget Punk for this week. So go read that article, the Buck Hoodlum Review. Alright, now it's time for Nutrition Punk. Gluten-free, a lifestyle, not a product.
And this comes from the great folks over at survivalpunk.com.
Absolutely.
We are, this is an article that I wrote, recently, actually, and, we're just gonna...
That's not the right article.
What?
That's not the right article.
No, that was open for another reason.
goofy ass. That's not the right article.
So I don't even need to read the article, because I read it, for God's sake.
You mean you wrote it?
I said I wrote it.
You said you read it.
I said I wrote it.
Whatever.
Well, I did read it, too, but I wrote it.
I would certainly hope so.
Anyway, so there's sort of some people that gluten-free is a choice. It's a lifestyle. You choose not to consume gluten.
Right.
It is not a product. And I'm sure everyone has seen the products in the convenience stores, supermarkets, are starting to pop up. Gluten-free, every damn thing.
I work at a compounding pharmacy where we make medicine in a troche form. And a troche is basically like a waxy square that dissolves under your tongue. I constantly have people call in and ask stuff like, is it gluten-free? I mean, about your medication.
Yeah,
it's the flavor of the month at this point.
They're hiding gluten in damn near everything.
Yeah, but people are treating gluten-free like Atkins-friendly was a few years ago.
Right. So, and some people... obviously, there's a demand for it. There's a market demand for things that are gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
So, people think, oh, I'm eating healthy, I'm eating gluten-free. Well, a lot of the times, what you buy, those products, those gluten-free products... are chemical shitstorms.
Absolutely.
If you read the ingredients in the back, and that's a game that I play occasionally, whenever I look at a product, I like to see what's in this product, and normally I'm disappointed because it's terrible products. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while you'll see something acceptable, but usually by replacing gluten wheat, they've put in 17 other kinds of, you know, grain flour, you know, rice, brown rice, syrup, brown rice, you know, flour, tapioca flour, this flour, that flour.
What you really want to look for when you're looking in this, you want products that have as few ingredients as possible.
Yes.
That's stuff that you actually know what it is.
Yes.
Who knows what guar gum is?
Yes. I mean, and I talk about in the interview, there's a lot of, if you eat a paleo diet, meat, fish, veggies, nuts, seeds.
You're just going to be naturally avoiding
gluten. You'll naturally be gluten-free without having to buy expensive chemical products that you don't need.
Yeah, you won't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
Not even think about it.
Exactly.
Now, what exactly is gluten?
Gluten is a protein in wheat and barley and rye.
Those have protein?
They have protein, yes.
It's called gluten.
Yes, it's...
The bad protein, the evil protein.
Yes, it's in those things, a particle that when it goes into the stomach lining acts like sandpaper and tends to scratch and eat away at your stomach lining. until it busts holes in your stomach lining. And then the gluten gets out into your bloodstream. And your body is like, hey, there's an intruder in my bloodstream. Let's send antibodies, which causes inflammation and which causes a lot of autoimmune diseases because there's gluten in your bloodstream all the time from all the food you eat. So your body's always attacking itself all the time, which leads to some bad autoimmune diseases or rheumatoid arthritis, celiac disease on the most extreme. You probably have one. So yeah, gluten punches holes in your stomach lining.
Do they have gluten-free pretzels?
Yes, they do.
They do?
Yeah, I saw some the other day. I actually thought of trying them. But the ingredients in the back are so disgusting, I was like, nope, I'll just avoid these.
I swear to God, it says Windex on the back of the bag.
Oh,
was that gluten-free?
Yeah.
Right. Is there anything else you want to say about the lifestyle of being gluten-free?
Just eat healthy. Just eat real food. Don't go buy stuff just because it's gluten-free. Just eat food that is naturally gluten-free. It also kind of annoys me that they're slapping gluten-free on every packaging now. A lot like the way they slap contains no trans fats on everything. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, potato chips, just because it says gluten-free doesn't mean it's a healthy food. Potato chips are stamped gluten-free. Rice Krispie cereal is stamped gluten-free.
Oh.
That does not mean it's healthy for you.
What?
No.
Rice Krispies isn't healthy?
No.
But I thought it's gluten-free.
Yes, and I'm sure it also is stent heart healthy, too.
It is heart healthy.
Yes.
It makes my heart happy.
And it makes your belly fat. And your heart actually very unhealthy.
Hey, fat is just excess happiness. It's got a store somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So now it is time for our permaculture minute. The Permaculture Minute is brought to you by the Permaculture Playing Cards that are hidden under the board here. By our friend,
Paul Wheaton.
I almost called him Josh Wheaton again. He did not create Firefly. I'll give him that at least. All right.
He likes Firefly.
Oh, he does? Okay. Yep. Well, I've never actually seen the show. Let's see. Okay, I already did that one. Did I do this one? Am I on the right end? Here, I'll just pick one at random. Okay, here we go. The permaculture card for this week is the Nine of Hearts. Fungi, or fungi, if you want to mispronounce it. Fungi facilitate the transmission of nutrition from the soil to plant roots, and also from plant to plant. Mycore mediation is the world of fungi breaking down pollutants. The mushroom is the sexual organ of the mycelium. Brown cubicle rot makes some woody organic matter last 500 years. Be careful, many edible mushrooms have toxic lookalikes. Fungi transform wood and other carbonaceous materials into amazing soil. Fungi can be edible, medicinal, and excellent helpers in the garden. It's got a picture of a morel mushroom on there.
So it does.
Yeah, those are tasty, actually. We've actually gone morel hunting down in our woods.
Really?
Yeah, we have some woods out back. And have they popped up back there in recent times? Yeah, your mother went down there not too long ago, didn't she?
Just in May,
yeah. And they're a very nice mushroom to partake of. So that has been our Permaculture Minute for the week. And moving right along, it is time for our Wild Edible of the Week. Our wild edible, as always, we pull it out of this book. The Illustrated Guide to Edible Wild Plants, Department of the Army.
And thanks for all the readers/listeners that have bought this book through the Amazon link on our recommendation and, for that matter, reading about half the book to you.
Okay, and today's wild edible, our wild edible of the week this week is sassafras.
Sassafras, say?
Yeah, sassafras. Sassafras albidum. This shrub or small tree bears different leaves on the same plant. Some leaves will have one lobe, some leaves two lobes, and some with no lobes. The flower, which appears in early spring, are small and yellow. The fruits are dark blue. The plant parts have a characteristic root beer smell.
Yes, because root beer originally was made with sassafras root. Then they, for a while, they thought that it was actually toxic to humans, and now they've decided against it. So
they make artificial root beer.
Root beer is made artificially, although sassafras may be coming back. And I think when I move on to my homestead property, there are some sassafras trees, so I may try to brew root beer, which is non-alcoholic, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, root beer. Now, sassafras grows at the margins of roads and forests, usually in open, sunny areas. It is a common tree throughout eastern North America, where we happen to live. Okay, the edible parts are the young twigs and leaves are edible, fresh or dried. You can add dried young twigs to leaves to soups. Dig the underground portion, peel off the bark and let it dry, then boil it in water to prepare sassafras tea. Shred the tender twigs for use as a toothbrush. And that, my dear friends, has been our wild edible of the week. Now it is nice. Time for a game that would be sweeping the nation if we ever played it anymore. We've had to skip a few weeks, like several of our other segments.
That is good. I love the interviews, but it's good sometimes just to knock out an old school survival punk podcast episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're actually looking forward to this. And just like I'm looking forward to Mike's Worst Cases, the game where we ask our survival punk, James here, to answer the best of five questions from a very outdated board game card set. All right. If he gets 3 out of 5 correct, he wins. If he misses, if he does not, he will be punished severely. Are you ready?
Always.
Okay, first question. How to complete a lifeboat rescue in rough seas? Do you A, secure your lifeboat to the rescue vessel and shout up to the captain that you are ready to board? B, keeping the vessel stable, all rise at the same time while waiting for the scrambling net? Or C, position your craft upwind of the rescue vessel and board one at a time with everyone remaining seated until their turn to board?
C.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. You actually got that. Position your craft upwind of the rescue vessel and board one at a time with everyone remaining seated until their turn to board. All right. You got one so far.
Yay.
Okay. So, next. How to remove a bee stinger. You A, grab the stinger with tweezers and gently pull in the opposite direction it entered, as opposed to the same direction it entered. B, with your index fingers approximately a half inch away from the stinger and on each side of it, squeeze it out so you remove the sac. Or C, use a credit card and scrape the stinger out of the skin.
It's C.
Ding, 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 correct.
I actually saw that in the Worst Case Scenario TV show hosted by Bear Grylls.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, and this is from the Worst Case board game. So.
Yes.
Okay. Question 3. How to stop a runaway horse. A. While sitting up straight, tightly grip the saddle horn with one hand and the reins with the other. Tug and release the reins with moderate pressure. B. Lean forward and firmly dig your heels into the horse's hide. Or C. Release the reins so the horse catches his feet in them. A slight stumble will frighten the horse, causing it to stop.
Read B again.
Lean forward and firmly dig your heels into the horse's hide.
I'm going to go with B. Wow.
Sorry, but the correct answer was A. While sitting up straight, tightly grip the saddle horn with one hand and the reins with the other, tug and release the reins with moderate pressure. All right. So you've got, let's see, you've got two. It's coming down to the last two questions. How to reduce the pain from a bee sting. I must have picked up the bee stinger section.
Yeah.
A. Mix meat tenderizer in water and apply it to the sting. B. Put olive oil on the sting. C. Pour tomato juice and whiskey on the sting.
Read A and B again.
A. Mix meat tenderizer in water and apply it to the sting. Or B. Put olive oil on the sting.
Both of those sound stupid. I'm going to go with A.
A, mix meat tenderizer and water and apply it to the sting? Final answer?
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct.
I would like to make an addendum that the true answer should have been A, B, C, D. D, smash up some plantain and put onto your wound.
Well, in any event,
true answer.
You have somehow won this week's episode of Mike's
Sing My Song.
You'll see me the best. Better than all the rest.
Yeah.
I'm walking on sunshine. Woohoo! And I'm ripping off free beer hot wings.
Anyway.
Nobody listens to that show. We're way more popular.
Absolutely. We've got, like, what, 300 listeners?
Come on.
Anyway.
Only 300.
Okay, now it's time for our final sponsor ad of the evening from the good folks over at CampingSurvival.com.
CampingSurvival.com. The best place for you to get all of your camping survival needs. They've got great deals on the Life Straw and fish antibiotics at the best prices with free shipping on a lot of the fish antibiotics.
I hear they sell body armor, too.
They sell body armor?
I think so.
Okay. I didn't see body armor in there, but I'm sure they have good deals. Well, armor
pieces or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
I heard about it.
Definitely, definitely good on the...
Well, I guess there's only one way to find out.
Go to campingsurvival.com, go to survivalpunk.com, click on their banner in the right-hand margin, and then go to campingsurvival.com, and I would say grab some fish antibiotics and stock up on them.
Yeah, and if you want to armor your fish, that's a good place to go to, apparently.
Yes.
Alrighty, and if you want to sell your fine products on the Survival Punk podcast, or just on survivalpunk.com, just contact James at survivalpunk.com. And we have deals for cash, we have deals for bitcoins, we have deals for bartering, we have deals for precious metals, we have deals for meat. Just contact James at survivalpunk.com and start selling your stuff where people are going to hear about it.
Yes, if you will be willing to send me a half of a grass-fed cow,
you get a year of advertising.
Please make sure the poor thing is dead, though.
Just chainsaw it and melt right then.
Yeah, I mean, do it humanely. We don't need a poor yes. thing, you know, begging for us to kill it.
Yes.
Alrighty, and it is time for our celebrity invite of the week. Like, I need to invite celebrities onto the show anymore. They just keep coming out of the woodworks. Alright, but this one is going to be very near and dear to your heart, there, Survival Punk James. This week's celebrity invite is an author named James Wesley Rawls. He has written some survival fiction books. And you've seen him on other podcasts. Well, I haven't seen him on other podcasts. That's a contradiction in terms.
Kind of weird,
there.
Yeah.
But I would love to get him on the phone with you there, buddy.
Yeah, sure.
So James Wesley Rawls, if you hear this, and I'm sure you do, you have an invite on our show, Survival Punk Podcast, at any time that you want to. And anybody else, heck, you know what? We'll even sell you a membership to the Survival Punk Army. And for anybody else that wants a membership to the Survival Punk Army, which is a great deal, by the way, just hit us up there, too. How do they do that? How do they join up?
They need to go to survivalpunk.com and click the logo at the top that says Join the Survival Punk Army. Also, in the bottom of every single post, there's a link to Join the Survival Punk Army.
Absolutely. Now, I mean... I take
PayPal money order. I took a Western Union money, actually.
Fascinating.
Barter, Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
Silver. Whatever you want to send me, we'll work something out.
And why would people want to join the Survival Punk Army?
You get exclusive content, such as our upcoming 9/11 megacast.
Right. Survival Punk's rantings.
You get discounts to over, I think, 11 vendors online, some great discounts.
From 10 to 20%.
Right. You get two ebooks by some amazing friends of mine. One on chicken raising with the cluck, and then 21 Days of Preparedness by David Nash.
Absolutely. I mean, that's two free ebooks.
And then upcoming videos with me and Mr. Couch Potato Mike himself.
Absolutely. There's only one way to get this. Find the links. Click on it. Join the Survival Punk Army. You know why you should join? Because the Survival Punk Army wants you! Well, you know, I think this has been a really great show.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. I've missed the format.
Back to the dynamic duo.
Absolutely. This is the way it started. And at the very least, we'll always have this. We'll always have Paris, sweetheart. All right. Well, for the Survival Punk Podcast, I'm Mike.
And I'm James.
And just remember, never forget where you came from. It'll help you to get where you're going.
DIY to survive.